Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Today is our last day to be working bills that are originated in our in the Senate that are assigned to our committee. So we have some public hearings and work sessions and combinations of both. What we're going to do is start with some works. Some of the public hearings will be jumping around based on availabilities of material, paperwork, and other such factors. So what we're going to do is we'll start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 357. And Josh?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 357 amends the crime of interfering with public transportation to eliminate provisions relating to trespassing on public transportation. There is a -1 amendment for you today. It reinserts those provisions, but it provides that the offense is a Class C misdemeanor unless the offender has three or more prior convictions for interfering with the public transportation under this subsection. With the -1 amendment, Senate Bill 357 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. So we're going to start off with Senator Frederick, and then we have a panel of three that have signed up. Lou?
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. I'm Lou Frederick, Senator from District 22, North and Northeast Portland. Several years ago, members of my community brought a serious issue to my attention that many folks were being charged and convicted with Class A misdemeanor for not paying public transit fare. Current statute makes interfering with public transit, IPT, a Class A misdemeanor, which is to be on transit property after being asked to leave. Similar behavior on any other property would be a Class C misdemeanor with substantially less penalties. The other provisions regarding interfering with public transportation involve actual disruption of service. Senate Bill 357-1 lowers the intentionally or knowingly entering or remaining unlawfully in or on public transit vehicle or public transit station from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C, putting that behavior on equal footing with trespassing on any other property. However, after three convictions, it allows for prosecutors to seek a Class A charge. IPT citations are often given to people experiencing homelessness or mental illness. We have further concerns that low-income riders and people of color have been targeted for conviction as well. Research commissioned by TriMet, the state's largest transit district, found that the elevated percentages of African-American riders being excluded from public transit should be examined more closely. Because TriMet spans three counties, people using transit property seeking shelter may acquire citations in multiple jurisdictions, leading to missed court dates they have no way of get to, and little hope of paying the fines prescribed. This system disproportionately affects those with low incomes, shelter and transportation challenges, and or mental illness. They take up jail space for violations that ought to be probation level. In January, DAs from Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clackamas County signed a letter where they determined that using Class C misdemeanor charges to address chronic fare evasion offenders on TriMet balances TriMet's need to maintain order on its system while simultaneously equating the level of harm with the appropriate charge in the criminal justice system. The DAs recognize the over-punitive nature of subsection A of IPT for fare evaders. What I hope to accomplish with Senate Bill 357-1 is to put in statute their concerns and the concerns of my community that a Class A misdemeanor is far too punitive for simple fare evasion. The -1 amendment preserves the use of subsection A of the IPT for chronic evaders, but it dismantles a system of routine and unfair convictions for our most vulnerable. I ask you to pay attention, close attention, to the others gathered here today to learn how the use of Class A misdemeanor for fare evasion has negatively affected and negatively impacted our communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for the Senator? Lou, thank you very much.
Sure.
Our panel that we have scheduled at this time is Mary Sell, Kimberly McCullough, and Manna Hernandez. Oh, Maria, I'm sorry, the R-I looks like an N. Sorry.
You're good.
I'll put a dot over the I for her.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. We enthusiastically support SB 357. We have for quite some time been concerned about transit enforcement policies and tactics, and in particular, we're concerned that low-income individuals and individuals with disabilities who may have limited means to pay fares and pay fines can end up in a situation where they end up being criminalized for their lack of means. We also have deep concerns, as Senator Frederick already brought up, about data that came out showing severe racial disparities in transit enforcement in TriMet, in regards to TriMet. IPT is a redundant law. There are other charges that can be used that have lower penalties. Again, as Senator Frederick said, those lower penalties are more proportionate to the harm here, right? Somebody getting on a transit, a bus or a train, and not paying the fare, carrying a Class A misdemeanor, is just simply too disproportionate to the offense. We also believe, just want to say that we believe that this bill is necessary, despite the fact that there have been recent changes related to TriMet enforcement. We do understand Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties are no longer charging folks for repeat fare evasion under this IPT statute, but that option still remains on the books. It could change if the policy changes, and it also doesn't apply to other counties in Oregon, where it would still have the same issue of being disproportionate. We believe this is a really much needed piece of transit reform. We also would like to see increased access to public transit passes for low-income individuals and people with disabilities. We think that this would actually have a much better impact on reducing fare evasion by giving people actual access to TriMet and other transit services when they don't have enough money. I just want to note that we supported House Bill 2777, which is on its way over here now, which creates an optional administrative process for folks that are dealing with TriMet fees. So I just urge your support, and happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Who's next?
Sure. Good morning, Chair Prasansky, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Maria Hernandez, and I'm here on behalf of OPAL, Environmental Justice Oregon. I'm here primarily and foremost to urge your support for Senate Bill 357. OPAL, as an environmental justice organization, we prioritize community empowerment and self-determination through grassroots organizing. We respond to the needs and priorities of our constituents in low-income communities and communities of color. A just transportation system that provides access to opportunity and it's a fundamental to liability for our folks and individuals who work on a day-to-day basis. And through that organizing, organizing our folks who depend on transit into our membership-based Bus Riders Unite, we know that people of color and low-income people are more likely to use cash and single-use tickets over purchasing monthly transit passes due to the upfront costs. This means that low-income riders and people of color are more likely to use several modes of transit and multiple transit lines. Hence, they are oftentimes more able, or like oftentimes they can get those issues or citations more often. As fares have become more expensive and as transfer and service have become less efficient, more riders have been forced to make challenging choices, including taking the risk of fare evasion. In order to complete those necessary transit trips. Addressing fare evasion through a Class A misdemeanor essentially criminalizes people for being poor and subjects people of color to increased chances of interactions with law enforcement with documented racial disparities in outcomes. Interfering with public transit, IPT, is a redundant law, one that is already covered by several statutes on the bookings, one that doesn't address the socioeconomic and racialized root causes that comes with fare evasion. Our community still needs ways to get to work, school, doctor's appointments, and just generally a way to live on their days. And while we support this solution, we know that this Senate Bill 357 addressed the root cause here. And while other agencies are addressing the root cause by actually providing low-income fare, providing fare relief for folks, here in Oregon, we are charging folks with a misdemeanor that is equivalent to a DUI. Low-income folks who already find it difficult to pay for transit should not be set back farther with an IPT charge. Riders, transit agencies, and law enforcement need a permanent solution, a policy that addresses the root causes of the issue. Senate Bill 357 needs to be further considered as a statewide effort to address the broader concept of criminalization of poverty. And for that reason, I urge all of you to support Senate Bill 357. Thank you.
Mary.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. My name is Mary Sell, and I'm here on behalf of Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I understand that we have a lot going on today, and so I'm going to be incredibly brief. I just want to say thank you so much for the sponsor, for bringing this bill forward. This has been a conversation that's been happening over the last, I believe, 3 years, and we believe that it's incredibly appropriate for you to be considering that now. I want to echo everything said by the senator, by Ms. McCullough, by Ms. Hernandez. They essentially took everything point by point that I was going to go through. I guess the only other two things that I want to emphasize are I have uploaded the agreement between the district attorneys just so you can kind of see what their thought process was, and I really do believe that it mirrors a lot of our concerns. And so by actually changing the law in this way, it's going to get at the root issues, including a disparate impact, and including racial disparity. And we also believe that it's going to positively impact our clients and OCDLA's membership. And lastly, I did upload a letter from Erica Rothman. Erica Rothman is a member of Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. She was a public defender at Metropolitan a couple years ago, and I believe that she actually was one of the constituents that came forward to bring this to the legislature's attention. And so she did write a letter in support. And so that's all that I have. I can answer questions if necessary.
All right. Are there any questions? Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on 357? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing, open the work session on Senate Bill 357. And Josh, what do we have in the way of amendments, if any?
Dash one amendment.
Did you want to?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 357.
Senator Thatcher moves the dash one amendment sent to Senate Bill 357. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 357 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 357 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. Senator Frederick will be the carrier on 357. We close the work session on 357. We're now going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on 719. And Whitney.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. On Senate Bill 719, I would have you focus on the Dash 3 and Dash 5 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment allows for service on a party or a party's attorney through the court's electronic filing system or by email in juvenile cases. If service is made through the electronic system or by email, the serving party must affirm that service was complete. So essentially, it's an update with the e-court system. The Dash 3 has no revenue and no fiscal impact. We also have the Dash 5 amendment, which you may recall from yesterday's hearing on Senate Bill 868-1. Our Dash 5 and 719 is very similar to 868-1, except for three respects. The Dash 5 elevates the burden of proof for the initial hearing to clear and convincing evidence. It also directs the court at this initial hearing to not make any findings regarding a mental health diagnosis. And finally, it removes a sentence that caused some confusion regarding the right of an officer to conduct a search after 24 hours from time of service. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 5, and we are still waiting for the fiscal impact.
All right. Thank you. The Chair wants to go ahead and make a couple of comments before we take testimony. Senate Bill 719 is a result of my oversight yesterday when we had three gun bills up, Senate Bill 868, Senate Bill 797, and Senate Bill 764. I neglected at the end of the hearing to state that we would be carrying those bills over for a work session. Because of that, they were not able to move forward. I apologize to everyone here at the dais, also to those in the audience for that oversight. What that has resulted in, we have had, as we do commonly, have placeholder bills in the possession of the committee. We are using 719, which is a placeholder bill that has the relating clause that's necessary to be able to move Senate Bill 868 into it. By this reference, I'm incorporating all of the testimony that we heard yesterday on all three of the bills into this bill that we have here, 719, understanding that some of it is not relevant to what is before us on 719, but I want to ensure that any mention of any regarding Senate Bill 868 is in fact part of this record for Senate Bill 719. So with that, we do have four individuals who have signed up. What I had planned on doing was taking individuals that had not given testimony yesterday because we have incorporated all of that testimony, but I see that the three that are signed up at this point have given testimony, and I'm going to go ahead and let them come up and each have 2 minutes. Kevin Sterick, Keely Hopkins, and Bosby Beckwith. If you three will come up. And while they're coming up, was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 719 regarding which was Senate Bill 868 that we heard yesterday that did not get signed up? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. An opportunity to speak a little bit more about this.
Yeah, remember, 2 minutes.
For the record, my name is Kevin Sterick with the Oregon Firearms Federation. There are two possible outcomes to this bill. One is a person is accused who's done nothing wrong, and now he's been humiliated and had his rights taken away, and now may really be a problem. The other is he really is dangerous, and the person who filed this protective order against them after his possessions have been taken away is still living with that person, this dangerous person, which makes no real sense to me. Under this legislation, you can lose your gun rights for having bought a gun. That is one of the disqualifiers under this bill, and I believe very strongly that some judges would take that. Also, you can lose your gun rights for having a DUI. Having a DUI is not a good thing, but it doesn't make you suicidal or homicidal. There's really no due process in this bill until after you've been convicted. So it's like you're in jail, and then you get to mount your defense. Another issue that has been brought up, I think this may come up again, is what happens to people who have NFA firearms? They can't be transferred in the conventional way. You can't. Is this a transfer to a police agency? Because potentially they could be giving them back. So that hasn't been discussed. And finally, I want to discuss Senator Boquist's comments yesterday that people thought were very funny about this would not affect you because your crazy ex-wife made these accusations. And in fact, this bill would make more sense if it was your crazy ex-wife who was making it, because in all likelihood, she would not be living with you. The danger of the people who are in fact living with you, who are now have accused you of being so dangerous that you can't have a gun, but they are living in the same household with you. And that, to me, that is what really worries me, is that I think that the real possibility of this bill is that you could very easily be getting people killed because of accusations that a person has had their rights taken away and their possessions taken away, and they are so dangerous that they can't have a gun, yet they're out there without a chaperone. And I think that this is so overly broad, there might be some serious unintended consequences. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Keely, are you going to go second?
Yeah, thank you. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Keely Hopkins, state liaison for the National Rifle Association, here again today just to reiterate our concerns about this bill that mirrors Senate Bill 868, which we did testify on yesterday. We're particularly concerned in regards to the lack of due process involved at the initial hearing. As drafted, this bill allows for the court to remove Second Amendment rights based on third-party allegations. There's no notice to the respondent until the order has been issued. So that would be law enforcement showing up at their door, telling them that they have an extreme risk protective order issued against them. Law enforcement is trained to de-escalate situations, but if there truly is a dangerous person or somebody having a mental health crisis, law enforcement will be showing up at their door, telling them that this order has been issued against them and that they have to surrender their firearms. And then law enforcement leaves. There's nothing in here to deal with the underlying dangerousness of the person or the mental health crisis they're going through. Before this order is issued, we believe that the respondent deserves to be notified. They need to be involved in this and have the opportunity to be heard. So again, we would just urge you to vote against the Dash 5 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Bozeb Beckwith. I'm speaking today as a private citizen, not as chair of the Gun Owners Caucus of Democratic Party Oregon, nor as the executive committee member of the Democratic Party of Oregon. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, arise today in opposition of 719. You all know the process. This basically is 868. My concern today, and I know I'll try and keep it very short, is essentially what Kevin brought up, is basically, and Senator Boquist, I believe, is aware of this and is trying to work out a solution, but the NFA, so National Firearms Act items, if a respondent had an NFA item and they actually followed this bill, they would be committing a felony, which is punishable up to 250 $1,000 and 10 years in prison, let alone would they be able to own a gun after that or maybe even not get a job because of a felony conviction. And under this bill, if the respondent tried to comply with surrendering the firearms in their custody to a gun shop or other person or local law enforcement, because it's an NFA item, they would not only be personally committing a felony, but they also, I believe, they could be subjecting the local law enforcement officer, his or her agency, or other person or gun shop to a felony charge as well. There are just a lot of unintended consequences with that specific issue that I just don't know about. Hopefully you can work out a solution. I still am opposed to this bill because I feel like it takes our guns away. The other comment I'll just make real briefly and then close, thank you for your time, is that I'm leery of my fellow union brothers on the law enforcement side that have to show up to someone's home, as my colleague said, at a time of possible crisis to remove someone's guns. Talk about sketchy encounter. That seems like that's kind of setting yourself up for failure. Thank you.
Well,
any questions? Sorry.
All right, thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you all very much for coming back. And again, I apologize for the mishap on my part yesterday. With that, I have one other person, Lisa Norris Lampe. And she is coming up here from the Department of Justice regarding if there's questions, I think, maybe on the dash threes and stuff.
That's so correct. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm actually with the Oregon Judicial Department, Lisa Norris Lampe.
Oh, Judicial, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And I'm just here if there's any questions on the dash threes, which pertain to the ability of parties to email in, do email service in dependency cases. Yeah.
So, colleagues, this is a tag-along in the sense of this was another amendment that was added to the bill based on the need for the Judicial Department to be able to complete its work efficiently. And so it has nothing to do with 868, but because of the relating clause, it is part of the bill, or hopefully will be part of the bill by bringing it into to the main frame of the bill itself. So that's why it seems like something out of the ordinary, out of it. But I just want to make certain those who had not had a chance to look at it, that it is a fix for the Judicial Department. So are there any questions on the dash threes?
No, I like that one, though.
Okay. Split vote, huh? All right. Thank you very much for
coming forward.
I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 719 at this point. And we're waiting for paperwork on this one, so we're going to move to our next public hearing. And I think at this point, unless counsel tells me differently, the bills that we discussed yesterday that are placeholders, I can go ahead and take care of those. We're not going to be going forward. All right. So at this point, just to set the record for if there is anyone, no one really did sign up. At this point, Senate Bill 718, Senate Bill 728, Senate Bill 738, Senate Bill 739, and the one that's underneath that, I can't read it, 741, and it looks like Senate Bill 388. That's actually a bill, right?
But we don't have anything for that.
So we're going to hold off on saying that. But those others, we're going to go ahead and not be having public hearings on those. So if you did by chance come for any of those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bills, feel free to leave because they are not going to be utilized for any purpose.
728 and 738.
Yes. What I have is 718, 728, 738, 739, and 741. You bet. All right. So I'm dropping down to, I guess it's going to be Senate Bill, we'll go up to the top, 714. Let's go ahead and do that one and get that one taken care of. Yeah. We'll open that public hearing. Josh?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 714 decreases the penalty for the crime of cheating. There is a dash one amendment that replaces the measure, however. The dash one amendment is a modification of Senate Bill 315, which addresses persons convicted of stalking and stalking protective orders that the committee heard on April 12th. The dash one amendment allows the court and the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision to impose reasonable residency requirements on persons convicted of stalking or violating a stalking protective order. With the dash one amendment, Senate Bill 714 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, so I have the sign-up sheet for 714, which is empty. Is there anyone here who did not sign up who wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 714? All right, not seeing any, we'll go ahead and close that public hearing. Do we have the paperwork?
We do.
We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 714. And at this point, we need the dash ones.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments for Senate Bill 714.
Senator Thatcher moves the dash one amendments for Senate Bill 714. Discussion.
Is this basically Senate Bill 315?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, it's a little bit different. Senate Bill 315 had, it was number one, it was limited to probation, so it didn't apply to felons who went to prison on the felony charge. Number two, it was more specific in that it prescribed circumstances in which the court can and can't do this. These amendments provide the court with the ability to consider the case and the facts and the circumstances and reasonable residency requirements.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? Any objections to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 714 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 714 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And does anyone want to carry this bill?
Senator Winters?
Senator Winters will be our carrier, and if not, Chair will back up if she's not available. And we'll close the work session on 714. And we're now going to drop down. And I'm going to go ahead and make the same statement I did on the other placeholder bills. I've now looked at the Senate Bill 388, and that also will not be going forward at this point. We have no need for the relating calls to move any legislation. And we'll now open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 716.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 716 reduces the crime of possession of gambling records in the second degree to a Class B misdemeanor. There is a dash one amendment that replaces the measure. The dash one amendment reduces the maximum sentence for all Class A misdemeanors from 1 year to 364 days. With the dash one amendment, Senate Bill 716 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, and I'm looking at the sign-up sheet for 716. I have no one signed up for 716. Is there anyone who wants to give testimony on Senate Bill 716? Not seeing anybody. We'll close the public hearing. We have all the paperwork.
We do with dash one.
And we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 716. I'm seeking a motion on the dash ones.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 716.
Senator Thatcher moves the dash one amendments into 716. Discussion? Senator Lethcott.
I would like to get a feel for where in the world is this legislation coming from?
All right.
What problem are we trying to solve?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lentecum, my understanding is that reducing the maximum penalty from 1 year to 364 days has federal immigration consequences. I don't profess to be an expert in federal immigration law. I want to make that clear. But my understanding is that it impacts the ability of the federal government to deport people convicted of misdemeanors.
Does this also impact county versus state custody on anything, you know, being a year or under or more than a year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, it's a great question. The answer is no. The rule will still be year and a day to go to prison.
Okay. Right.
Actually, losing a day.
Yeah, so, that's why I wondered if it would be shunting more people to the county level.
No, it's great it to have the question to get it on the record, but yes. Any other discussion? Any objections to the motion? Motion carries, and we'll take a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 716 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 716 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Manning, will you be the carrier on 716?
Yes, sir.
All right, and we will close the work session on 716. And I believe that pretty much takes care of the first page, and we've got winners on that. All right, so with that, we're going to move on to page two. And we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 961.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 961 provides that a defendant may petition the court to enter diversion 14 days after the defendant receives laboratory notes and test results from the defendant's urine or blood sample under specified circumstances. The Dash 2 amendment clarifies some of the language around these three circumstances. The additional time to file a diversion petition applies to defendants who provide a police officer with a urine or blood sample, are charged with being under the influence of a controlled substance or inhalant, and who have either not received the results of a blood alcohol test or whose blood alcohol test is below 0.08. With the Dash 2 amendment, Senate Bill 961 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. I have Mary Sell scheduled to give testimony while she's coming up. Was there anyone else who wants to give testimony on Senate Bill 961?
Mary? Good morning, Chair Brzezinski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. My name is Mary Sell. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association in support of this bill. Really, all I want to say is this is a great addition to the law. My practitioners tell me all the time how 30 days up front is just not enough time to get all of the discovery in order to determine whether or not diversion is a good option for their clients. When I was practicing myself, I would often sit down with clients and not have all of the information in front of us, and it makes it very difficult for clients to prioritize how they want to move forward. And so we're in support of this law. Technically, what it does is it just gives us a little bit extra time to make sure that we have a urinalysis, to make sure that we have all of whatever tests were done, so that that client knows whether or not diversion is a good option. And so we're in support, and I can answer any questions if you have any questions.
All right. Is there any questions? Mary, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 961. We have the paperwork, I believe, and we'll open up a work session on 961.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 961.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 961. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 961 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 961 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And do we have a volunteer? If not, the chair will carry.
I'll do it.
All right, Senator Manning will be the carrier on 961. And we'll close the work session on 961. And let's go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1019.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1019 authorizes persons involved in tax court litigation to obtain attorney's fees both at the tax court level and the magistrate division. There is a Dash 1 amendment that clarifies that the attorney fees can only be awarded if the taxpayer prevails at the ultimate conclusion of the case. With the Dash 1 amendment, Senate Bill 1019 has no revenue impact and a fiscal light, requiring the addition of a subsequent referral to your Ways and Means Committee.
All right. I have three individuals who have signed up. Mark, your last name, I'm sorry, I'm not going to pronounce correctly, of the Department of Revenue, Douglas Schmidt, and Bruce Miller. Why don't you three please come forward? What the chair would like to have on the record is exactly how this works. This is, I believe, a bill that came through Senator Manning's office, and the way it's been explained to me, it appears that a person first step into this type of tax issue is with a magistrate, and then from there, if they are not satisfied, in other words, they lose at that level, they can have a de novo appeal. And so the chair would like to know, is that de novo limited to just the petitioner, or does the state have the ability to do that? And where at any time does attorney fees actually attach to any of these proceedings? Because I'm getting mixed information as to whether someone actually has the right to attorney fees at the magistrate level prior to it actually going into, I guess, a full judicial proceeding on a de novo. So if y'all can put that into your, I just need to put a record together. I think I know where we're going to be going with this, but I just want some stuff on the record before we go there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm senior counsel to the State Court Administrator. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Judicial Department and the Oregon Tax Court. First to the chair's question, my understanding of the process is most tax disputes are appealed to the magistrate division, although a party can seek a special appointment to the regular division in front of the tax court judge. At the magistrate division, it's a much more informal process with a lot of mediation trying to resolve the dispute. The attorney's fees are not available. There cannot be an attorney's fees award made by the magistrate. That's a carryover from the period of time before there was a magistrate division when there was an administrative process in the Department of Revenue, which was informal like this, and they did not award attorney's fees at that point either. That process was moved over when they created the magistrate division and the tax court. So a party that's dissatisfied with a written decision by the magistrate can has 60 days to file an appeal in the regular division of the tax court. At that point, the tax court judge will hear the case, generally conduct a trial, a much more formal process. And the tax court judge may award attorney's fees and reasonable costs, which are basically expert fees, at that point. And the tax court judge can award those to cover what happened at the magistrate level, should that be appropriate. So under the current process, the magistrate may not award attorney's fees. The tax court judge may award attorney's fees, and that can include the fees that were incurred at the magistrate level.
All right. So if someone wins at the magistrate level, would there be any reason for them to try to go in front of the full tax court? I'm trying to figure out if there's a connect. The information I received, and I'm trying to get clarification, is that someone who wins at the magistrate level is actually filing with the full court so they can actually acquire attorney fees. And I'm just trying to, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm afraid I don't have any information on what parties' motivations are at that point. My suspicion is that most of these get resolved at the magistrate level and no one goes forward. What we see at the tax court level are real areas of dispute where the taxpayer is generally not satisfied with the award made by the magistrate and tries to get a better award at the full court level.
Okay. All right, maybe that makes a little bit more sense. Thank you, Bruce.
And Mr. Chair, I would like to talk to the Dash Ones, if I may.
Sure.
Okay. On you have an OLIS, a letter from Tax Court Judge Henry Breithaupt. I won't go back over that. He talks about some of the history I just gave you, as well as some ambiguities in the bill as drafted. I'm concerned that the Dash One amendment adds to the layer of ambiguity here. The way it's written, well, the way the current law is, the tax court magistrate enters a written decision. Parties then have 60 days to file an appeal to the regular division of the tax court. The amendment as written would say that the tax court magistrate cannot award attorney's fees unless no appeal's been filed. So you have a situation where the magistrate enters a written decision. Now we wait 60 days to see if anyone files an appeal. And after that's run, then the magistrate can award attorney's fees. That raises at least a couple of situations that we're trying to puzzle through. One is the time to appeal is run, so when the magistrate awards attorney's fees, there's no possibility of judicial review of that award, which some taxpayers may want to appeal at if they don't feel like they got what they wanted, or government bodies may want to appeal it if they feel that the award was too large. If that's the direction that the committee would like to go and the assembly would like to go, it's probably advisable to put in the amendment that any decision on attorney's fees by the magistrate is final and not subject to appeal. There are probably some due process issues with that, but there are other instances in bills that the assembly has passed where they have done that. The other possibility is that the magistrate is now allowed to enter the attorney's fees award after that period of time has run. The problem is, under the statutory scheme, once that period is run, the decision is final. So unless you go into create a statutory scheme where there can be a supplemental decision, much like a supplemental judgment under Chapter 18, it's unclear what the magistrate can do. So those things can be cleaned up, but they really should be spelled out, because I think those ambiguities will be problematic for taxpayers, government bodies, and the court.
All right, thank you. Before we take other testimony, let me just say where we're at. This bill is not going to be moving forward. What the chair is going to do is have this brought up during the interim and have a little bit more work. I wanted to get some stuff onto the record, but I'm at the same time, Douglas, I know that you're here on the Assessors Association. If there's some comments you'd like to put on the record, feel free to do that. But I just want to make sure both of you understood that we're not going to move the bill today. I didn't think it was ready. I just wanted to get some stuff on the record, set the framework, so we can work it during the interim.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I am Douglas Schmidt, Polk County Assessor. I am testifying on behalf of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors, OSACA. We do have a couple of concerns that we would like to get on the record if there's discussion. When you go into magistrate, you're coming out of a local level, typically a BOPTA appeal, which is at the local county level. We see a lot of times what happens when taxpayers go to magistrate, they provide the counties with additional information that they may or may not have had at BOPTA, and we agree to a stipulation. Under this bill, the magistrate judge could award attorney's fees for that because they prevailed. They did reduce the value down on that. So that is a concern we have in awarding of attorney's fees at magistrate. The rest of it, I will say that with the discussion that we've had with assessment and taxation funding in the session this year, there were counties that expressed concern to me about the ability to pay for attorney fees at magistrate if they were awarded, because they're just barely having the money to do their assessment and taxation functions. And the courts, if it moves on to the regular division of tax court, it can be awarded. Those costs can be awarded by the tax court judge from magistrate.
Okay. Thank you. And
yeah, this is not Mark Garth.
And I'm saying, you know, that looks like a Mark to me, but yeah, it doesn't look like a Mark over there.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Garst had a couple of bills in another committee important to the Department of Revenue. So,
well,
let me just ask, why it's not here
is
right
there
now.
Something that the Department of Revenue needs to put on the record? We're not going to be working the bill, like I said.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Melise Cunningham from the Department of Justice, and
okay,
here on behalf of the Department of Revenue, because Mr. Garst had to testify elsewhere. For the record, the Department of Revenue agrees with all of the comments made already, and would just like to also note that part of the problem with awarding attorney's fees at the magistrate division, at least with the way the bill's drafted, is that the review by the regular division is a de novo review. So it's not an appeal in that sense. So that's another technical issue. And just to let the committee know also that currently magistrates can award costs. So that if a taxpayer appeals, they can recover their filing fee, for instance.
Okay.
So that is already per a decision by the tax court judge. And unless the committee has any questions.
All right, any questions? All right, thank you all very much. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1019. And we're going to open up what I believe is our last public hearing for the day, which is 1042.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. Sorry about that. Senate Bill 1042 authorizes the governor to enter into agreements with another state for purposes of cross-jurisdictional coordination and enforcement of marijuana-related businesses. There are no amendments, there is no fiscal impact, and there is no revenue impact.
All right. And I do have Bo Whitney here. Bo, why don't you come ahead and come on up. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on 1042? All right, before Bo gives his testimony, this is a bill that I put forward, and the reason I did this is I think it's important for us to be looking forward as to the next steps as we see cannabis becoming a viable commodity industry within this state. I think it's very important also to be looking at ways that we can actually help with the diversion that's occurring currently and in some areas of this industry within the state, and by having the ability to have interstate compacts with adjacent states, I thought that this was a way that we could do it. Clearly, there's a lot of provisions there as to why and how it would work, and it's one of those situations that would be limited to states that have active programs. It would be requiring transportation to be done in modes that are not exclusively under federal jurisdiction, and it is something that, knowing where the industry is and the supply that we have, as a means of being able to have legitimate locations for this to, product to be moved to, and would also set up a framework for what the chair expect will be on a interstate level in the near years. Bo?
Chairman Przanski, my name is Bo Whitney. I'm from Whitney Economics. It's a business consulting and economic analysis firm. I also represent New Frontier Data, a research and policy analyst company out of Washington, D.C. Given my role as the senior economist at New Frontier, I have to provide a neutral analysis of this bill rather than advocacy, because it violates some of the tenets of our goals at New Frontier. Essentially, this bill looks at the prospect of exporting cannabis to neighboring states. And there's pluses and minuses associated with this. It's a very complex issue, as you might imagine. For perspective, the Oregon market right now has approximately 585,000 active users, generating roughly $550 million in legal sales in Oregon alone. By expanding into the other markets, that would essentially multiply this by a factor of 10. There'd be 5.4 million users, approximately $5.2 billion in potential market revenue based upon 2017 estimates. And so there's a great opportunity for Oregon businesses to tap into additional markets. And given the abundance of supply in the Oregon market, you know, this addresses diversion. It doesn't necessarily address diversion completely, as there's economic incentives to, due to pricing differentials, to export, say, to New Jersey, where you can garner 5x the revenue, illegal as it is, but 5x the revenue associated with standard Oregon prices. But nonetheless, given the fact that you have an expanded market, it would reduce the amount of diversion, so that in itself is a positive. Increased competition, because you have so many actors in multiple states now, that increases competition not only abroad in these other states, but also in Oregon. And what this comes down to is it comes down to a pricing point. So in this sense, those that can do low-cost manufacturing will prevail, whereas this may impact, and I say may, the higher cost, smaller family farm type of concerns. And due to this, you know, increased competition, you know, there may be, you know, some additional economic impact, which I have yet to analyze. The increased competition in itself drives down prices. And by driving down prices, this is also beneficial for the state, because it drives out the illicit supply, the illicit market here within this jurisdiction. But once again, there's these costs and benefits, you know, lower prices, increased competition drives out the illicit market. However, it may impact small family farms and impact jobs associated with this. Fairly importantly, to say the least, there's federal intervention. So the Cole Memorandum is a guideline that was provided to the states, essentially saying if you comply within these guidelines, don't divert product out of the state, don't promote money is going to cartels, et cetera, not supplying this to the youth, et cetera, then as long as you comply with these guidelines, then there won't be the risk of federal intervention. By allowing for these compacts in other states, then that essentially challenges the authority of the federal government. Now, there are some legal precedences that may, you know, substantiate that states have the rights to enter into these interstate agreements, but I'm not a legal expert on that matter. But what I can say is that there is a trade-off between lower prices, jobs, illicit market, lack of diversion versus the potential of federal intervention. So, in summary, there's benefits and there's advantages and disadvantages to this bill. It's tough to assess the cost of federal intervention relative to the costs and benefits associated with increased trade. So, you know, I guess that summarizes my testimony. I just wanted to lay out some of these issues that hopefully with some data will help, you know, drive a better and more informed decision-making at the policy level.
All right, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on this. I wanted to get this on the record. Chair is going to contemplate as to what we're going to do next with the bill, if anything, in this session. I do also want to put on the record that this was not just, taken on as a new novelty. We actually have a compact that we entered into as a state with the Warm Springs Tribe. And so this is a framework, a basis where we've already seen a compact entered into. And then there's some legal discussion as to, even though it's a sovereign nation, it's within the borders of the state. So there's a lot of that going back and forth as well. But this is something that is not unique to Oregon, since we've already done this. And so we'll take this under consideration. Thank you very much, Bo, for making yourself available.
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity.
All right. And at this point, we're going to go ahead, and I believe that takes care of our public hearings for today. And we're going to start our work sessions. And And so what we're going to do is we're going to start at the on our top of our list. Let me do this. So, councils, I'm going to go through the ones that we talked about yesterday as to the ones that we were not planning on moving. And that way, for individuals that are here, they don't have to wait if they are here only on one bill. So correct me if I'm wrong before I actually do any type of gavel on this. But it appears at this point we'll not be moving Senate Bill 133. Senate Bill 292. All right, everyone caught up. Senate Bill 315. Senate Bill 525. Senate Bill 898. Senate Bill 977. And I need to put something on the record on that one because I know councilors are going, wait, that's not on the list. Senate Bill 1006 and Senate Bill 1014 are the ones I'm looking at not moving forward today. With that said, I will put on the record as before we start taking the other work sessions. All right. Senate Bill 133 is actually being moved into Senate Bill 117. That's why that one's not going forward. The other commentary for the ones that are not moving forward. On Senate Bill 898, it looks like this is something that we're looking at putting into a interim work group, if I remember correctly. Same thing with Senate Bill 977, and I'll put on the record on for Senate Bill 977. There was an amendment that some individuals were supporting 100% requirement to be paid to a former employee who is under a non-compete. But in further discussions, it seems to me we need to have a lot more of a discussion. This is something that is based on the last change we made in this area was 10 years ago. So we will be doing work groups on that during the interim. Same thing with 1006. That will also go into interim work group. And let's see, no action. And then 1014 is not moving forward because the proponents of the bill have not come forward with anything to move forward the bill. And so at this point, we assume that they've decided not to go forward with that bill. And I think that takes care of the ones that we're not planning on hearing today. So if you are here for one of those bills, feel free to leave, knowing that those are not going to be going forward today. So we will be starting with Senate Bill 57. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 57.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 57 on March 1st. The bill modifies the role of the public guardian and conservator in protective proceedings. There is a Dash 2 amendment that authorizes health care providers to disclose protected information in accordance with federal law, authorize fingerprint-based background checks of prospective employees, volunteers, and contractors, and creates an account and subaccounts to hold the funds of protected persons. With the Dash 2 amendment, Senate Bill 57 has a minimal revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, though the bill does have a subsequent referral to your Ways and Means Committee.
All right, so we need the Dash 2s, it sounds like.
Correct.
Senator Thatcher.
Okay, Mr. Chair, move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 57.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 57. Discussion.
Is this an addition or a gut and stuff? I can't tell.
Chair Prasansky, Senator Thatcher, I think it's actually, I would put it in a third class, it's a modification. So I think these provisions went in the existing bill and it just tweaks them. And okay. The public guardian is here if you'd like to hear.
Would you like to have more comment on this?
Okay, so it's still making changes to the role.
Fred, why don't you come up?
Yeah.
You put your name on the record. And
yeah, Chair Prasansky, I'm Fred Steele. I'm the State Long-Term Care Ombudsman and Director of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, which houses the State Public Guardian Program. And what the Dash 2 does is addresses three things briefly, which is to better address the access or for medical providers to share protected health information with the public guardian. Second, it addresses some language around banking for individuals that become protected persons under the public guardian. So dealing with the banking issues with Treasury, just to clean up some language that exists in statute for that. And thirdly, and as provided by counsel, addresses background check process for staff of the program. It's very much a modification of the introduced bill. And what the introduced bill overall is doing is cleaning up the public guardian statute and dealing with some tweaks to it since the program. The legislation was passed in 2014. The program has been being implemented for the last 2 years. pardon me. And it's just looking at, tweaking the language so that it can better fit the needs of the program and the implementation of the program.
Mr. Chair, can you back up to the part where you're talking about sharing health information? Clarify that. What did I just hear on that?
Sure. Chair Prasansky and Vice Chair Thatcher. Currently there's a barrier to some degree. Some medical providers are concerned with sharing protected health information with the public guardian program, and so we're just providing some language to give them, a little bit more statutory clearance to be able to share information with somebody that's being proposed for public guardianship. Does that help answer the question?
Okay, so this is prior to them being appointed a guardian.
Correct, but it's so that we can do a proper evaluation and propose, and present the information to the court, who will ultimately review it. The probate court will review the information and, evaluate whether guardianship is appropriate for the individual. So we need those medical records, for example, to be able to fully evaluate whether an individual has problems with capacity in particular, which would be the reason that you need a guardian and somebody to make decisions for you. So you need some level of medical information and that protected health information from the healthcare provider.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. So I think we have the motion on the Dash 2s. Any discussion? Any objections to the motion? So ordered. Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 57 as amended to the floor. Is it going to Ways and Means?
Yes. Okay.
With a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 57 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion? Senator Thatcher?
I just have some reservations and I can't put my finger on it right now. So I'm just going to be a no.
Okay. Senator Dimbrough.
Mr. Chair, did we hear that this has a minimal fiscal? In which case, should we request that the referral be rescinded?
There's no harm in requesting.
What's that?
There's no harm.
Yeah. And was it minimal?
I believe it was. Let me verify that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's minimal, I'm willing to have a modification to the motion.
Bear with me. This is not the fastest.
All right. So, Senator Thatcher, you've heard what Senator Dimbrough requested.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on that? You got the motion, so.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I withdraw my previous motion. I'll just say, okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 57 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that we requested the referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
All right, Senator Thatcher now renews her, modifies her motion to be moving Senate Bill 57 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request the President consider removal of the prior referral to Ways and Means. Questions? Discussion? Objections?
Like I said, yeah, I'm going to be an objection.
All right, so we have one objection to the motion. Senator Thatcher, motion carries. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 57, and I think we'll want to have a carrier just in case, so Senator Dimbrough?
Sure.
Will be the carrier on 57 if it does go directly to the floor. We'll close that work session. Open up Senate Bill 65 for a work session.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 65 on February 13th. The Dash 2 amendment modifies the Psychiatric Security Review Board's restorative justice program that was in the introduced bill. It authorizes the board to contract with a nonprofit entity to administer the program, and it prohibits the use of restorative justice materials by the board. So it tries to separate the restorative justice program from the board's primary function. There's also a Dash 3 amendment that was not in the introduced bill. The Dash 3 amendment eliminates the Oregon Health Authority jurisdiction at they call it the State Hospital Review Panel, I believe. It eliminates Oregon Health Authority jurisdiction over persons found guilty except for insanity of a crime and places all of those offenders, all offenders who have been found guilty except for insanity, under the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. So with that said, the Dash 2 amendments have no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. The Dash 3 amendments have no revenue impact, but they do have a fiscal light. So the committee, should the committee adopt the 2s and the 3s, the committee will need to add a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 65.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 65. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 65.
Senator Thatcher now moves the Dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 65. Again, discussion?
Isn't this supposed to save money? Wouldn't it be
Mr. Negative? Chair, Senator Thatcher, it does. And I learned yesterday that sometimes LFO needs negative fiscals because it's part of the budgeting process.
Okay. So it does need to go to Ways and Means.
That is my understanding.
All right.
Okay. We learn something new every day, don't we? You are putting money back in, but we are balancing off of it before it gets to us. Okay. So any objection to the motion with the Dash 3s? So ordered.
And Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 65 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 65 as amended by the Dash 2s and the Dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requests the President's office to consider a referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And that is on its way without a carrier. We will Senate Bill 101A open up a work session on Senate Bill 101A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 101A on April 6th. The bill addresses child abuse investigations that are conducted in a private or public school. The bill provides that investigators are not required to reveal investigatory information to school officials as a condition of conducting the investigation and prohibits school officials from disclosing investigatory information. The Dash A3 amendment adds an emergency clause. With the Dash A3 amendment, Senate Bill 101A has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
All right.
Ms. Chair, move the Dash A3 amendments to Senate Bill 101A.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 101A
or should I say dash A3 amendment into Senate Bill 101A. Discussion.
Why are we adding an emergency clause?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, your decision in the, first, but second of all, I think the argument is there are investigators are facing challenges conducting child abuse investigations today, and so I think the sooner the view is, the sooner this is clarified in the law, the better it is for purposes of these child abuse investigations.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions? Any objections to the motion? So ordered. We now have the A3s in.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A4 amendment to Senate Bill 101A.
I'm sorry, that was a change. We're good
with what? Threes. We're not going to do threes. Just the threes?
Yeah, that's what I understand.
Huh. They're going to keep talking, is my understanding, Senator.
Okay. All right. Well, I like the dash A4. So all right. There we go. I'll withdraw that motion.
Okay.
Just as a reminder, the dash A4s clarify that the provisions of this statute apply only to victims or witnesses of child abuse and have no application to suspects. And there may be folks present who could provide you with more information if...
But we're not moving that one.
So we're going to do this. We're going to recess the work session on Senate Bill 101A at this point. We're going to come back to that. At this point, would I just make sure we have the A3s that we've moved into the bill. And so that's the status of it right now. And we're going to come back to that. I now have questions based on Senator Thatcher's inquiry. Thank you for bringing that up. So with that, we will move down to Senate Bill 132. It's not? All right. So that's what I was looking for.
Sorry.
All right. We're going to we'll take a recess just for a moment, so we'll make sure we got everything squared. All right, we're going to call the Senate Judiciary Committee back to order. When we took this recess, we wanted to get clarification on Senate Bill 101A. We've talked to some of the individuals that have been proponents of the measure. They've informed us that what they would like to be doing is having a broader discussion on Senate Bill 101A in the House regarding having investigations and interviews with children. And so because of that, we're going to go ahead and move forward without the A4s at this point, based on what I said. I will also put on the record there was an individual who is asked to give testimony today on 101A. The chair is not going to allow that, and the reason is this is set for a work session. It was not posted for a public hearing, and it's not in the context of giving us clarification for an amendment. We've already got where we're at. So whatever input you'd like to have in the future, you should be looking at this on the House side when the bill's there, and where they actually have it scheduled and posted for work for a public hearing and not exclusively for a work session. So at this point, the chair has in front of it a 101A as it was amended by the A3s, and so at this point, the chair will go ahead and just move. Or do you want to go?
You want me to move the bill?
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 101A as amended with the dash A3 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 101A as amended by the A3s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yeah, I guess I would have preferred having that protection in there for suspects, I suppose, but I will give it a hesitant yes.
Well, you know, I'll be frank with you. I thought that that's what we were somewhat at, and so I guess we have a couple of things here. We have it open for discussion, and I can take a temperature as to whether people want the A4s in it or not. If we do, we can take care of that right now. And I'm not.
I can move them, and we can just take a vote. How's that?
Why don't we do that? So if you'll withdraw your
motion. Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion to send 101A as amended to the floor.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves to rescind her motion of sending Senate Bill 101A as amended by the A3s to the floor for additional discussion on the A4s. Any discussion? Any objection? Not seeing any. Let's go ahead and load up the A4s.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the dash A4 amendment to Senate Bill 101A.
Senator Thatcher moves the dash A4 amendments into Senate Bill 101A that's already been amended by the A3s. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 101A as amended with the dash A3 and dash A4 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 101A as amended by the A3s and the A4s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. The chair will carry 101A to the floor. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 101A. And at this point, we're going to jump down because we're waiting for paperwork on 117 as well as 132 from my understanding. So we'll drop down to Senate Bill 261.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 261 on April 11th. The bill creates a civil law rape shield statute, and the Dash 1 amendment modifies language surrounding the confidentiality of motions filed to the court. With the Dash 1 amendment, Senate Bill 261 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, Dash A1? Are we talking about Dash A1? Okay.
One.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1. I don't know where I got A from. Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 261.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 261. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 261 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And let's see.
Gelser?
Yeah, I think so. Senator Gelser will be the carrier on 261.
Did we get a carrier for 101?
101 is the chair.
Thank you.
And so we'll close the work session on 261. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 301.
Thank you, Chair Prezanski, members of the committee. You previously heard Senate Bill 301 on February 21st. It makes it an unlawful employment practice for an employer to condition employment on refraining from using a substance that is lawful in Oregon during non-working hours. We have the Dash 9 amendment that makes it an unlawful practice to refuse to employ someone who is a medical marijuana user and provides several exceptions. It also removes the emergency clause and provides an effective date on the 91st day sine die. The Dash 9 has no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. So the chair will start off some comment. Or let's see, why don't we go ahead and get the motion on the Dash 9.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 9s to Senate Bill 301.
All right, Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 9s into Senate Bill 301. Discussion?
Okay, what was the difference between 8 and 9?
The nines had one other thing to it.
If I may,
yes.
Chair Prezanski, members of the committee, Vice Chair Thatcher, in the Dash 8 there was just a technical fix that Legislative Council contacted us about over the weekend where it was intended that the Dash 8 only applied to medical marijuana users, and he
didn't.
Had forgotten some language in one of the sentences, and so he had to go back in and make the Dash 9 to make it clear that at all points it is just applies to medical marijuana users.
Yeah, just to make that clarification again, Council, Legislative Council, when they were doing the drafting, we had asked for the Dash 8s to limit it to just medical users that have a medical card, and Eagle Eye and LC realized that there was still a line in there that would apply to recreational users. And so that was the modification. So I apologize.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
And so now this one does, in fact, limit itself to application to those who have medical cards that have been issued through the OMMP program.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 301 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I think we're still putting the nines in.
Well, okay, Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw that motion and back up a little bit. All right. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 301.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 9 amendment into Senate Bill 301. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I think it makes it a lot more doable, and I appreciate the efforts made.
All right. So any other discussion, any objection to that motion? We'll go ahead and motion carries. And now we need a motion on the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 301 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 301 as amended by the Dash 9s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. First, we're going to start with Senator Denbrough, then we'll go to Senator Manning. I saw his hand, and then Senator Thatcher, and we'll do cleanup. All right.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The bill, I think, still as amended, provides an exemption for contracts with employment that's part of contracts with the federal government, right, where there are prohibitions. And I'm wondering how this would affect employees who are working for, say, nonprofits that contract with state and local or county entities that have prohibitions in their contracts. Yes. I don't know if that's a question, Josh, you can answer. Whitney can answer.
Whitney, it might be worth going through the exceptions that are still built in, because I think we've got those covered, but let's just put it on the record.
Yes, thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. There's several exceptions that were added in. One that was in the original bill was that this would not apply if it for the performance of work while impaired. There's also an exception about the if it applies to the essence of employer's business, and that was trying to get at some of the context we had received about people who are engaged in maybe more high-risk positions. For instance, I think there was some contact or concerns raised by people who deal with manufacturing munitions. And that kind of has a two-part test to it. We looked at some case law that dealt with essentially age discrimination in certain occupations that are more high risk, like law enforcement and some federal cases. And so it talks about how if the essence of the employer's business is something that isn't compatible with a medical marijuana user, that gives the ability to discriminate. It's also still, which was in the original bill, subject to an applicable collective bargaining agreement. So again, if there was a union that had an agreement, that would apply. And then it has for the federal law, if there is a federal law or regulation requiring an employer to attest for the use of cannabis, that's an exception. And then finally, a contract between an employer and the federal government, which is contingent upon the employer having a drug-free workplace. So I think to answer your question, I don't hear it specifies the contract between an employer and the federal government, so we did not have the foresight to include in there the state government position there, but you have the other exceptions for not being impaired at work, the collective bargaining agreement, or if it goes to the essence of the employer's business.
I think that satisfies my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I wrestled with this one for some time now, and you know, while we're now, it's moved now to medical marijuana, I understand the value of having medical marijuana use. So I'm also leery of the availability of people that can access a medical marijuana card for false pretenses. So while the amendment has addressed a lot of other issues, you know, pertaining to federal businesses that have federal contracts and stuff, when a person signs an agreement with a business that says that this is a drug-free environment, I don't know. I think we're in a very unique situation here in Oregon because, you know, I'm very hesitant about this. While I do agree with it, since we have legalized recreational marijuana, that part has been taken out. But I'm still a little leery on this, so I'll wait and see what the rest of my colleagues do.
Excellent, excellent. Keep us in wait. I appreciate that. We'll hear all the discussions, and we'll see where you want to vote.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yeah, I have still some reservations, not only with just this particular idea, you know, you're signing up for a drug-free workplace, but then also I think that doesn't mean prescription. And I know there's people abuse prescription drugs of all kinds, so I mean, you know, this isn't about that. But I also had a sort of concern with one of the exemptions that may not fully cover everyone, and that is on page, well, shoot, I'm looking at the eights right now, so I apologize. I'll pull out the right amendment. That would be on page 2. And line 17, where it starts, a contract between an employer and the federal government under which the receipt of federal monies is contingent on the employer having a drug-free workplace. A lot of times, it's not just a contract between the employer and the federal government, subcontractors to the contractor that has the, you know, agreement, and some of those, that blanket, that umbrella contract with the federal government goes down further, and it doesn't spell that out. So I'm just worried, because of courts being very literal in their interpretations, that it would not apply to subcontracts.
All right, Senator Lithicum.
I also have reservations, and I don't like the layout of this. I think in particular, we are, with the Dash 9s, we are creating a new protected class. The protected class is now called a registry identification card holder. And I think the state has created a, you know, we've opened a can of worms with legal cannabis, but now that we've done that, providing the workarounds as appropriate makes sense. I don't think this solves the problem we're looking to solve. Employee-employer relationships are one of those things that the more we write blanket legislation on, the harder it will be for any business to be successful in accomplishing their goals.
Mr. Chair, I yes. forgot to say something.
Sure.
Okay, so if this was the only bill that we were putting on employers, I wouldn't be as reserved, but there's so much coming forward and so much that has happened in just recent recent sessions that there's still, you know, business is trying to absorb and find their way on, and it just is kind of one more thing. And so to me, in that light, I really have reservations. I do appreciate how this was really pared down, and I probably would support it if it wasn't the only thing, if it was the only thing going through this building that was directed at business.
All right, so Senator Denborough.
Yeah, let me just say one thing, Mr. Chair. You know, it seems to me that, you know, certainly in the past, before marijuana was legalized, there was a lot of abuse of the medical marijuana card. And I think we're seeing less and less of that now, you know, since someone has the option to just purchase recreational marijuana. So I think that, you know, the problem of misuse is probably lessened. And so it makes me feel more comfortable, I think, with this. In the same way that, you know, we don't prohibit people who may be taking various painkillers to deal with a short-term or maybe even long-term physical injury. The key thing is that the individual not be under the influence while they're at work, and that, you know, becomes something the employer will, you know, have to figure out how to, you know, when the person is not doing their job in a safe and responsible manner. So I think this comes, obviously you have to balance, and I think that this will allow that balance to happen.
All right, so the Chair would like to go ahead and make some comments. One of the reasons I'm supporting the motion that we have is that I do believe that it's time for us to actually give protection to workers that are actually been authorized by a physician, a healthcare provider, to actually use marijuana for medicinal purposes.
Historically, we know that the voters of this state passed medical use in 1998, and so we've had it up and running since 1999. And it's one of those situations, having individuals come before this committee, including veterans that have said that they can get all the opiates that they need and would want to actually deal with a PTSD, another type of pain. Those individuals are not prohibited from working if they can actually function under those medications, as compared to, as they said, if they have access and use of medical marijuana, they are in fact able to retain a job and actually be able to function in society. And it seems contradictory that we're now at a stage where after 17 years that in this state, actually 10 years after it was enacted, moved from the state controlled schedule from a 1 to a 2 in recognition that we acknowledge that it does have medicinal purposes. I think that the Dash 9s actually gives a lot of safeguards and the appropriate ones that are necessary for employers to be able to do what they can do now. And I think, Senator Denbrough, you're correct that the real test here is not whether or not someone is actually has indication of marijuana use in their system, which you can find out through a urine test that can be present for up to a month, as compared to whether or not they're actually impaired at the time that they're working. And this is not a means to allow for individuals that are in fact impaired for whatever the substance is to be able to continue to work. And so it seems like there are the safeguards there. I also asked legal counsel to give me an opinion as to the viability of Senate Bill 301. They went through it and said that they felt that 301 was, in fact, within the bounds of us being able to address. And he goes into detailed analysis of the Emerald Steel case and also brings forward that there is a law in Arizona that has, in fact, allowed for and does distinguish out for individuals that are using medical marijuana in the workplace that they have safeguards. So that is why we have it going forward. And at this point, unless there's any other discussion, we'll go ahead and call for the vote. Senator,
just one final. You know, I would like to look at how medical marijuana cards are being issued at some point moving forward to make sure that we have a good foundation. We have not in this for this, but moving forward sometime, I'd like to have that discussion as well.
That's something that we can always take up. I will say that I think Senator Denbrough touched on it. The information that's coming out of the testimony in the Marijuana Regulation Committee, I think is what it's called now, the Joint Marijuana Regulation Committee, no pun intended, is that basically we're seeing a drop in the number of card holders. And I think Senator Denbrough is correct that those who may have been gaming the system are at this point not going into the cost of getting a card for access to cannabis. I would suggest for those who are interested, you can look at some of the hearings early on when the committee was the implementation committee of 91 and realize how many individuals have, in fact, sought relief and have found relief from use of marijuana from social economic status, racial, across the board. And so I think it's something that is pretty compelling. It's unfortunate that our federal government has not done what they should have done as far as the chair is concerned back from the early 70s when they established the Controlled Substances Act, that they did not start doing R&D on cannabis as a medical product, or we probably wouldn't be having this discussion today with 50 years of actual research. So with that, let's go ahead and call the question, and let's go ahead and do a voice vote on this one, please.
Senator Denbrough.
Aye.
Senator Linthicum.
I remain opposed.
Senator Manning.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thatcher.
No for now.
Chair Przanski.
Aye. Motion carries. And at this point, I think it's going to the floor. The chair will carry 301 to the floor. All right, we'll close that work session on 301, and we are now dropping down to Senate Bill 360.
Thank you, Chair Prezonsky. Members of the committee, you previously heard Senate Bill 360 on March 9th. It directs the Department of Corrections to create a community service exchange program. We now have the Dash 4, which replaces the measure and directs each county governing body to create a community service exchange program. It also allows local supervisory authorities to determine whether a community-based organization qualifies for this program. There is no revenue impact, there is an indeterminate fiscal impact, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 360.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 360. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 360 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 360 as amended by the Dash 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and also with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion?
This has an emergency clause?
I don't remember.
Let me double check. I think it got removed in the amendment. Let me double check.
Yes, Section 5 of the amendment. This act takes place effect 91st day.
So that's not emergency clause.
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered.
I moved it to the floor.
This one's going to Ways and Means, yeah.
Yeah,
Ways and Means. So it goes, it's on its way to Ways and Means. We don't need to put a carrier since it is on its way to Ways and Means. We're now open up Senate Bill 488.
Thank you, Chair Prezonsky. Members of the committee, you previously heard Senate Bill 488 on March 21st. For this one, you will want to focus on the Dash 2 amendment. First, it does remove the provision declaring an emergency. It also creates a requirement that law enforcement agencies provide towers with a motor vehicle's owner's contact information when the vehicle has been reported stolen and is recovered. It also specifies that the contact information may only be used by the tower to notify the motor vehicle owner that their vehicle has been recovered. Specifies that fees for storage may not accrue until the tower first attempts notification. It creates a provision allowing registered owners of motor vehicles recovered totaled after theft to transfer title in lieu of payment of the towing fees if this occurs within 14 days of notification from the tower. And it specifies that the tower is responsible for Department of Transportation fees for transfer of title. It adds an exception from the requirement to surrender certificate of title if the owner of the vehicle transfers title to the tower. So essentially it had several provisions dealing with victims of auto theft and the fees that they incur when their vehicle is recovered after towing. It also, based on the hearing, it adds another provision allowing the owner of a towed vehicle to inspect the vehicle. I think if you recall, there was some testimony about from a young woman from Portland whose car had been towed after being stolen, and she wasn't allowed to inspect the vehicle. So we did include that provision in this Dash 2 amendment. There is a minimal fiscal impact. There is no revenue impact. It currently has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but with the minimal fiscal impact, you could request for that to be removed.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Chair. I apologize. What's the difference between the Dash 1 and the Dash 2?
The Dash 2s took in more provisions. I believe that's the one that picked up the sanction type stuff and the inspection. I say sanctions in the sense of where the, if you remember the young woman from PSU.
No, I was not here. Sorry.
All right. This was a situation where we had a student from PSU. Her car was stolen, and after it was stolen, it was found. It was towed to a tow lot. She went there, and it was toward the end of the day. She asked about the vehicle and asked to see the vehicle, and the gentleman who was working at the tow lot told her that they couldn't get her to it. It was too far in the back, and if she didn't make a decision, they were wanting her to sign over the title to the car.
Wow. Okay.
And they basically said, if you don't sign over the title, we're going to continue to have these fees against you on a daily basis. And unfortunately, she didn't react, maybe being cautious, so she went in and signed over her title.
to her vehicle, and it turned out that the vehicle was not damaged, that the vehicle was, in fact, able to be repaired, and she then was embarked in a battle as to whether or not she still owned the car.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 488.
All right, Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 488. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 488 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that we request that subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
All right, Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 488 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation requesting the President to rescind the prior reference and referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And on this one here, because we hope that it goes to the floor, I'm going to put myself and Senator Riley down as co-carriers on this one. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 488. And we're now going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 494.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 494 is the advance directive bill that the committee heard on March 23rd and March 27th. The Dash 9 amendments before you today consist of the Dash 2 amendment that you heard in March with two additional provisions. First, the Dash 9 amendment requires that the first form submitted by the committee must be approved by the Legislative Assembly. Second, the Dash 9 amendment eliminates the committee's rulemaking authority and makes a corresponding name change to the Advanced Direction Adoption Committee. With the Dash 9 amendment, Senate Bill 494 has no revenue impact. There is a fiscal impact. It's posted on OLIS. Looks to me like it is less than $7,000. And the bill does currently have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right. So the chair is going to be asking to rescind that Ways and Means based on the numbers. I'll go into greater detail, but why don't we take the motion on the Dash 9s and we'll open up for discussion.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 494.
All right, Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 9 amendments into Senate Bill 494. Chair will start. This is an amendment that was brought forward. We wanted to ensure there was clarity as to exactly what was being asked of the Oregon Health Authority in conjunction with the committee that will be addressing the rules. We also wanted to ensure, based on request from members, that we actually have the form being reviewed by the legislature as a whole and requiring an affirmative vote. So at this point, we have accomplished that, I believe, with the Dash 9s that will, in fact, require the committee to meet forward to the legislature as required to the four different committees, and that it will, in fact, require an affirmative vote before the form is adopted as into the process. It also, as I mentioned, we wanted to clarify because there was some concern based on how the language was written in 494 that the Oregon Health Authority thought that they were going to be required to do an extensive rulemaking in this process, and that is not what is being was sought or requested. So the Dash 9s again give clarity for that. Other discussions regarding the Dash 9s? Any objection to the motion?
Mr. Chair, sorry, you didn't fix my finger. I appreciate the move to have the first form of the advance directive approved by the legislature. I would rather that we just said any substantial changes, be approved by the legislature, kind of like we do with a lot of other sort of advisory committees.
Okay.
So. I still object. Okay. I appreciate the Dash 9.
All right. And what the chair would say in response is that this is not the first committee that would have the authority to actually come up with rules, having them posted, and then go in effect without the legislature actually giving affirmative approval. We don't have to look too far. You can look at the post committee. You can also look at the rules of civil procedure. Both of those are set up in a way in a context to allow what we would consider the certified smart people to put forward and still allow us as the legislature
to call in a question, but it gives more efficiency from this chair's perspective. And by meeting the requirement of having the first set of the rules being reviewed by us will give us the context of what we actually want and what we expect to be moving in the future. So besides the comments on the dash lines, any more on that? If not, let's go ahead. Besides Senator Thatcher on adopting the dash 9 amendments as compared to leaving the bill in its original form, is there anyone else who's objecting to the adoption of the dash 9s? Not seeing any. Motion carries. And at this point, would you want to make the motion? Or do you want someone else to make the motion? Senator Denbrough, would you make a motion to move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requesting that the prior reference to referral to Ways and Means be rescinded?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 494 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the prior referral to Ways and Means be requested to be rescinded.
Senator Denbrough moves that Senate Bill 494, as amended by the dash 9s, go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and also request that the President's office remove the prior reference referral to Ways and Means based on the fiscal being way below what it was originally anticipated to be and what it had come out previously when the bill was heard in 2015. Any objection to the motion? Senator Thatcher, I'm assuming you're
objecting. Yeah. I'm opposed.
All right, and Senator Lithicum is also opposed. Is there anyone else opposed to the motion? Not seeing the motion carries. Chair will be designated as the carrier if it does, in fact, go to the floor. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 494, open up a work session on Senate Bill 496.
Chair, you've opened this work session. I liked Senator Thatcher's recommendation that all constitutional form that the rules be reviewed by the legislature, and you had comments to that. I'm wondering if Senator Thatcher would consider a minority report to suggest that.
Well, y'all have a lot of time to think about that, so you can work on that if you'd like to. You can give us notice before we end, and like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Y'all two to work on that. All right. With that, we've opened up the work session on Senate 496.
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. You previously heard Senate Bill 496 on March 8th and March 9th. It deals with the recording of grand jury proceedings. We now have the Dash 8 amendment. The main difference with the Dash 8 is that it directs the court to instruct a grand juror on recording the grand jury process. It also removes the emergency clause and takes effect 91st day sine die. And it also specifies that if it is dealing with a grand jury proceeding that resulted in not a true bill inquiring into the actions of a public servant, then only the transcript can be released to the public if the court finds a basis to release the transcript. Finally, it requires the district attorney to request a protective order for the grand jury materials if the victim requests that from the district attorney. With the Dash 8, there is no revenue impact, there is a fiscal light, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I take it we are entertaining the Dash 8s.
We are entertaining the Dash 8s.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 496.
All right, Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 8s in the Senate Bill 496. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 496 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
All right.
Are we going to rescind that?
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to... You caught me off guard, Council. Why don't we go? Could you go back over the fiscals? Because it sounds to me that whatever was an obstacle is no longer an obstacle.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee, I must have misspoken. It is
it's a fiscal light to
move it to Ways and Means.
Okay, so all the texting can stop. Everyone doesn't panic in the building. All right, I think we've got a motion that we're all going to be moving with, and that is
With the dash eight.
With the dash eight, moving it to
The floor and then pass. To, yes,
okay.
Do pass to Ways and Means by prior.
All right,
reference.
Senator Thatcher has moved the Senate Bill 496 as amended by the dash eights to the floor with the do pass recommendation and with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion? Senator Thatcher.
And Mr. Chair, I do appreciate the fact that a protective order can be requested, and I know there's still some concern out there about how effective that would be. I would like to get my questions answered on that before I give my yes vote, but I do appreciate all the work that's been put into it and improving it.
All right. All right. Any other discussion? Any other objection besides Senator Thatcher? Not seeing any, so ordered. And we'll close the work session on that since it's on its way to Ways and Means. And we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 503.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 503 on March 1st. The Dash 2 Amendment replaces the measure and requires the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to adopt standards and qualifications applicable to court visitors, authorizes the state police to conduct background checks of court visitors upon court request, and requires the court to appoint a visitor in a conservatorship. With the Dash 2 amendments, Senate Bill 503 has no revenue impact, and we have a fiscal light consistent with the existing referral to your Ways and Means Committee.
All right. And I'm going to ask Senator Dembro, did you have any comments you want to make?
No, Mr. Chair, just that this is the product of a work group and seemed like a very sensible approach to creating a manageable program.
All right. So, Senator Thatcher, if you'll move the Dash 2, if I got that correct.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 503.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 503, I should say the amendments in the Dash 2s into Senate Bill 503. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 503 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. I think we're good to go on that.
Okay. All right. And Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 503 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation but with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any objection? Any? None? So ordered. And it's on its way to Ways and Means. Now we'll open up a work session, to close that work session, open a work session on Senate Bill 505.
Thank you, Chair Przemski, members of the committee. You also previously heard Senate Bill 505 on March 8th and March 9th. It again deals with the recording of grand jury proceedings. You have a Dash 4 amendment that is pretty well identical to the amendment we just discussed in Senate Bill 496. The difference here is the 505 has the district attorney's office ensuring that the grand jury proceedings are recorded and delegating that recording responsibility to a grand juror. Oh, and there is no revenue impact. There is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and again, there's a fiscal just for the purpose of moving it to Ways and Means.
All right, thank you. Senator Thatcher?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 505.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 505. Discussion? Senator Luscombe.
Aren't we, you know, at odds with 496 here, you know, in terms of, so why don't we just let this go to Sleepy By?
Because the chair doesn't want it to go to Sleepy By.
Okay.
What the chair wants to do is, because I've dealt with this issue more than one session, that we're going to give them both bills. The difference is, as we've heard, is that whose would be the custodian of the records under 496, if I got this right, would be the courts, and 505 would be the district attorney's office. The most important part, and this is for the record, what we have attempted to do is keep the process that we currently have intact. The purpose of this bill was to basically have a recordation of the proceeding within the grand jury. And at this point, the current law, a person on the grand jury is appointed to actually take notes, handwritten notes, and what this will basically say is that that individual who is dedicated or is identified to be the foreperson or the one, the scribbler of the record, will just basically operate the recording machine by pushing the button on, turning it off,
and getting the recording. And so this will allow for guidance as to when it goes to Ways and Means, that we're not looking to set up a bunch of FTE either in the court or in the district attorney's offices. All we want to do is have them give a short little instruction about how to turn the machine on and how to turn it off, and that we shouldn't have to have FTE to actually do any type of training or to actually operate the machines, because at this point we don't have a scrivener that's in the room with the grand jury except for the grand jury itself. With that said, are there any other questions? All right.
I do have a question,
you
Mr.
bet.
Chair. So presumably this would be the less expensive option?
Both of these will be less expensive. The bottom line is that what we want, the courts are saying that under their fiscal, well, you're going to have to hire, they're going to have to hire FTEs to actually be in the room and manage all the equipment, blah, blah, blah. And the same thing with the district attorney's offices. They're saying, well, we're going to have to carry new FTEs, bring people in to run the recording machine. It's not that difficult for someone to push the button that says on, and turn it off. And if we can actually have individuals take handwritten notes, which are not complete and concise and does not actually state what an individual testified to in front of the grand jury, it seems to me that if we want transparency in government, if we want to have an opportunity to make certain that someone who tells a version of a story or testifies in grand jury and they modify or change their testimony abruptly in the trial, that they can be questioned about that, because only then can you actually ensure that a person that has been charged with a crime has their opportunity to have cross-examination of an individual who has changed their testimony. That's what it's all about. Any other questions? All right. Any objections to the motion? So ordered. And
Mr. Chair, yep. I move Senate Bill 505 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 505 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as it was amended by the Dash 4s and on to with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion. Senator Thatcher.
I have the same concerns from 496.
All right. Any others? All right. And so is that a?
That's a no.
No. So motion carries, and the bill's on its way to Ways and Means. As a companion, they'll travel together. All right, we'll close the work session on 505, open up work session on 510.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. You previously heard Senate Bill 510 on April 10th. It concerns data exchanges for the Department of Justice to obtain access to delinquent debtors who have pending insurance claims. If you recall, there was some testimony about persons that have child support obligations that are in arrears and perhaps are looking at receiving some insurance settlement, and this allows the state to obtain that information. We now have the Dash 3, which defines claimant as a person asserting a claim of at least $500, not including property damage. And it also requires the financial institution to notify the administrator in writing at least 10 days prior to disbursing funds to the person. There is a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact with the Dash 3 amendment.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 510.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 3 amendment into 510. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 510 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 510 to the floor as amended by the Dash 3s with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Lithicum.
I will object. There are just facets of this that I think add complications to the support requirements that families are already engaged in as the state intervenes into this. So I will respectfully object.
All right, Senator Lithicum is objecting to the motion. Is there anyone else objecting to the motion? Not seeing any, so ordered. And that one is going to the floor. Senator Dembro, will you carry this one, or you're okay with that?
Sure.
Senator Dembro will be the carrier on 510 then.
All right, colleagues, we're right at 10 o'clock, and so I think at this point we need to make decisions as to moving forward. We still have a number of bills that we need to address. I believe that all of the paperwork is not back on some of the bills that we still have to take on, and so we will be recessing. The question I have for committee members, it looks like we can have a room available as early as 3 p.m., and or we could have one that looks at 5. I assume that we could possibly even do one at 4. It seems that would probably be no earlier than 3, and I'm not sure what individuals in the way, what they have for committees and availability.
I've got committee 3 to 5.
Okay. All right. So then that tells me that we'll be meeting at recessing till 5 if you've got a committee at 3. And let's just do that. I'm not sure the committee you have, which committee is it?
Education.
So you're probably going to be pretty busy today is what I would assume. All right. So we're going to go ahead and recess the committee at this point. We will be back in at 5 o'clock, and it looks like we will be meeting. I'm going to move us from this room here. We're going to move down to hearing room A. A is an apple. At 5 p.m. this evening, we'll recess the committee to take up remaining bills or any other matters that we need to take up that's on our agenda for today. With that, we're in recess until 5 p.m. today, and hearing room A is where we'll reconvene. Good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee back to order. We took a recess from this morning because we ran out of time in preparing and moving forward the bills that we have still before us. So at this time, we're going to go ahead and continue our work sessions that we have. And I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 719.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. We heard about Senate Bill 719 today and also carried over some testimony from yesterday. We have the Dash 3 amendment, which is just a bit of a technical fix allowing service by email in juvenile cases and also through the court's electronic filing system. And then we have the Dash 5 amendment, which is based on Senate Bill 868-1 with some small revisions. There is no revenue and no fiscal impact on the Dash 3. There's no revenue on the Dash 5 and an indeterminate fiscal on the Dash 5.
All right, so we need the Dash 3s for the technical, and the Dash 5 is the substitution of 868 into that bill.
Correct.
Did you want to make motions, or do you want me to have someone else make motions? Okay. All right. Senator Dimbro, will you make motions for the Dash 3 amendments?
Sure, Mr. Chair. My pleasure. I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 719.
Senator Dimbro moves the Dash 3 amendment into Senate Bill 719. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Dimbro, the Dash 5s.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5's, 5 amendments to Senate Bill 719.
Senator Dimbro. I'm looking at who's the carrier. Moves the Dash 5's into Senate Bill 719. Any discussion? Senator Lithicum.
Is it appropriate, given the one was, quote, relating to courts, do these firearms amendments fall into the native 719?
We have asked and received information from Legislative Council that they do. What it is dealing with the court functions of what the court does. It just happens to have as part of the proceedings the item of firearms attached to it, but it's not per se a firearms bill. It's one that, based on the information I've received through counsel and through the through Legislative Council, that since these are court proceedings and court matters, that it does fit into the relating clause.
Even with the law enforcement issue, because they're acting on the court order, that's part of the court.
That's what I would say. That's what they said. They've put in, they've given us the approval to move forward, and based on our attorney saying that, that's what we have before us.
Nevertheless, I'd like to object.
And Mr. Chair, I will be too.
Okay.
Just to make sure.
That's quite all right. I figured that was going to happen. While you spread the wealth, you know.
Yeah, but you know.
All right, so the Motion at this point is to move the dash fives into the bill. We have two objections, Senator Thatcher and Senator Lethicon. Is there anyone else in objection to the dash fives? Not seeing, motion carries, and we'll take a motion on the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 719 as amended by the dash three and dash five amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Denbrough moves Senate Bill 719 to the floor as amended by the dash threes and the dash fives. Is there any discussion with the due pass recommendation? Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure this will shock you, but I will be opposed to this motion.
All right. Anyone else opposed to the motion?
You bet.
Okay. You're not surprised, and you bet. Senator Thatcher and Senator Lithicum opposing the motion. Anyone else in objection or opposing the motion? Not seeing anyone else. Motion carries. The bill's on its way to the floor. The carriers will be Senator Burdick and Senator Boquist. They will determine the order that they will be presenting. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 719. And we'll go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 1042.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. We just heard Senate Bill 1042 earlier this morning. And it authorizes the governor to enter into agreements with another state for purposes of cross-jurisdictional coordination and enforcement of marijuana-related business. There is no amendments, there is no fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
All right. Let's see if we get a. There's no amendments, correct?
Correct.
What? And now I'm shocked.
I know.
Okay.
I am too. Senator Thatcher.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 1042 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 1042 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator Thatcher.
I have my concerns, so I will be a no on this.
All right. Any other concerns or objections? Senator Lithicum.
The broad scope that this this cannabis legislation leads to across all facets is something I'm not sure Measure 91 recognized, and now we're stuck bringing up the backside of it. I also will object just on the grounds we're now placing more responsibility in the governor's office and removing it from the legislative branch.
Okay. Regarding that comment, what this bill does is authorizes the governor, based on the legislature, giving them the authority to enter into agreements with another state for cross-jurisdictional coordination and enforcement of marijuana-related businesses. As mentioned earlier, when we were doing the public hearing, this authorization has been previously given to the governor regarding other compacts in the case with sovereign nations. I believe it was the Warm Springs tribes, if I'm not mistaken. And so this is really, since the legislature is not in the position, I guess, to be able to react to conditions, opportunities that may present themselves. This is not uncommon for the legislature to authorize the governor to enter into these type of agreements, compacts, on the behalf of the state if they deem it appropriate. So that's the point, and we have two objections. Is there anyone else objecting to the motion at this point? Not seeing anyone. Motion carries. Chair will carry 1042 to the floor. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1042. And we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 49.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 49 on March 27th. The Dash 1 amendments were before you at that time and addressed juveniles who are unable to aid and assist in their own defense in a delinquency proceeding. The Dash 1 amendment provides that when a youth is evaluated or treated for the inability to aid and assist, the youth may not be removed from their current placement unless the youth is in a correctional or detention facility. With the Dash 1 amendment, Senate Bill 49 has no revenue impact, but it does have a fiscal impact that requires a subsequent referral to your Ways and Means Committee.
All right. So we'll take a motion on the Dash 1s. Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 49.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 49. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 49 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that we be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 49 as amended by the Dash Ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requests the President's office consider a referral to Ways and Means based on the fiscal that we received. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Since it's on its way to Ways and Means, we will not do a carrier. We'll close the work session on 49, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 117.
Thank you, Chair Przanski. Members of the committee, you previously heard Senate Bill 117 on March 21st. It addresses several provisions concerning the towing of motor vehicles. The Dash 4 amendment allows the tow of motor vehicles from a parking facility regardless of the signage if there's prior consent of the vehicle owner or operator. It also requires a tower to maintain authorization that they receive for a tow for 2 years and provide it to the owner or operator of a motor vehicle upon request at no additional charge. It also has some requirements that towers with multiple storage facilities tow a motor vehicle to the closest location in the same county that has space available to where the vehicle was towed from. It defines when a hookup of a motor vehicle is complete. The big thing that the Dash 4 also does is in the original bill, there was the creation of a civil process to challenge the legality of a tow, and that was removed in the Dash 4. And so there is a minimal revenue and a minimal fiscal on the Dash 4.
Okay, and that's the only one we're looking at is the Dash 4s?
Correct.
Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate, or excuse me, I move the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 117.
Senator Thatcher moves the amendments of Dash 4 amendments for Senate Bill 117. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 117 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 117 as amended by the Dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Thatcher?
I haven't had time to absorb these amendments, really, so I got to reserve my yes for later if I get there, but I'm going to be a no for now.
All right. And Senator Lithicum?
I object based on the fact that it removes a right to the circuit court hearing in the Dash 4.
Can we get clarification on that?
Yes, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. The original bill was adding a right of review in the circuit court, and so the Dash 4 is removing that. It's not removing any existing rights or privileges that people had to challenge their tows, but there was a provision being added into the law in the introduced version of the bill that's getting removed in the Dash 4 version of the bill.
So I just want to make sure you knew that.
Right, and I thought that was a... I thought that was appropriate in the original.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure you knew that the current legal remedies are remedies are still there. We're just not adding a new remedy for them. So we're not adding a new cause of action or course of getting to the courts. All right. We have two objections. Is there anyone else that is objecting to the motion of moving Senate Bill 117 as amended by the Dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Not seeing any, motion carries. Senator Riley will be our carrier on Senate Bill 117. We'll close the work session on 117, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 132.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 132 on March 29th. The bill addresses criminal defendants who are unable to aid and assist in their own defense. The Dash 3 amendments allow the state hospital to conduct fitness evaluations in a jail or at the state hospital without admitting the defendant. They authorize restorative services to be provided to inmate defendants, so inmates pending trial for a new charge in the Department of Corrections in that facility. The amendments also authorize a one-year commitment for a criminal defendant charged with murder if a court decides that the defendant likely needs care to remain competent. Finally, the Dash 3 amendments create statutory procedures surrounding the compelled medication of incompetent defendants. With the Dash 3 amendments, Senate Bill 132 has no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 132.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 132. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Thatcher?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 132 as amended with the dash threes to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher now moves Senate Bill 132 as amended by the dash threes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Thatcher?
Does this have a possible fiscal impact? Referral to Ways and Means or anything?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lincoln, it has an indeterminate fiscal impact, but it does not, in fact, have a referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? Any objections to the motion? So ordered. And is anyone wanting to volunteer for this? Or
I'll take it, Chair.
All right. Senator Manning will take Senate Bill 132. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 132. And we're now on our page 3. I have us where we left off, which is picking up on Senate Bill 512. So I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 512. And
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. This is the last of the child support bills we heard back on April 10th. It modifies terms used in the current law regarding parentage of a child. We now have the dash 3 amendment, which allows the court to address parentage fraud based on non-biological parentage and then make several conforming amendments for the neutral language that is being added in. And it also identifies ways parentage may be established. There is no revenue impact on the dash 3. There is a fiscal impact, and we would need to add a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Senator Thatcher, okay. Dash 3 is on the way.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 512.
Senator Thatcher moves the dash 3 amendments for Senate Bill 512. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 512 as amended with the dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And subsequent
referral to Ways and Means.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 512 as amended by the dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requests the President's office consider a referral to Ways and Means based on the fiscal report. Any discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, we had a hearing, and now I'm not sure what all changes really happened with the dash 3. It's a little bit of a confusing measure. You stated it, but Whitney? It was in blah, blah.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. Members of the committee, I don't know if you recall because we've been pretty busy, but there were some concerns raised at the hearing that the bill was not covering all of the areas in the law that needed to be addressed for putting in these kind of neutral terms when you look at same-sex marriages. And a work group convened between the Department of Justice and one of the other I can't remember the witness's name, but there was one main woman that came with some concerns. So my understanding is they met and worked together on drafting the dash 3. They indicated they weren't able to be here at the 5:00. They were here this morning, but they stressed to me that this was their work group and that they were all pleased with the results. My understanding is it's a lot longer of a bill now with the dash 3 because there were several areas that the original bill was missing to have the conforming amendments, and then also looking at broadening when you're looking at the parentage fraud to again have it be able to address the same-sex marriage that we have in the country now. I don't know if that helped.
It did help a little bit. It made it a little bit clearer than mud, and I guess I need to talk to him a little bit, but I moved it.
Okay. So we have a motion before us, refresh on Senate Bill 512 to, I think, just to incorporate the dash threes at this point, or have we done that?
I think
we. All right, so we're going to the floor at this one. So this is the one that Senate Bill 512 as amended by the dash threes to the floor with a due pass recommendation and also requesting a referral to Ways and Means based on the fiscal. So besides that discussion that we had, is there any other discussion? Is there any objection, Senator Thatcher?
I just need more info.
Okay.
I'm okay. Keeping mother and father in and allowing husband and wife to drop out is certainly fine given the environment that we're in. The assisted reproduction aspects of this get rather convoluted, but nevertheless.
All right. Besides Senator Thatcher, is there any other objection? Not seeing any. Motion carries. That is on its way to Ways and Means. No carriers necessary. We'll move to Senate Bill 690. Open up a work session on 690.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the committee heard Senate Bill 690 on April 6th. The Dash 1 amendment streamlined the process necessary to obtain a certificate of good standing, requiring that the petitioner file a petition and, if supervised by a supervising agency, written certification that the person is eligible for the certificate of good standing. The amendments require the applicant to serve the petition on the district attorney, who is afforded an opportunity to object. With the Dash 1 amendment, Senate Bill 690 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 690.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 690. Any discussion?
I will just mention one thing. Last night when I was going through and looking for amendments, I saw Dash 1, but it was actually for 960, so I never did actually see the Dash 1 amendment. I guess it's in there now, mm-hmm. but... Yeah. Did you notice it was 960?
No.
Okay. Anyway, just saying.
Okay.
I haven't had a chance to.
All right.
No, I guess I'm not sure where.
So do you want us to go over it?
You can real quick. That'd be great. So I guess my main questions are if we're directing a city police or whoever, county sheriff, to issue these by a certain date, they can issue them now, and so what we're trying to solve is trying to make sure they're getting these done in a timely fashion. Is that the problem?
I can address it, Mr. Chair. This is the program that allows the formerly incarcerated to, you know, if they meet the conditions of their release and their probation, and, you know, gives them some kind of certificate that the state recognizes that they have done what they've been asked to do.
Thank you for the clarification. Bill. I think I got it mixed up with another certification bill, so thank you. Appreciate the explanation.
All right.
And I do want to say, Mr. Chair, if I can, that I really appreciate the work, the Josh's work, and, you know, just all the help with getting this into a form that I think is going to be pretty easy to both on the part of the courts and on the part of the individual, and that was our goal.
All right, wonderful. Any other comments or discussion? Any objections to the motion on this before us? Not seeing any. Motion carries. And let's see, I think we completed that, so we'll have Senator Frederick be our carrier.
Denver.
Oh, Denver? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was. All right. So Senator Denver will carry 690 to the floor. And we close that work session, open our work session on 713.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, heard Senate Bill 713 on April 4th. The Dash 1 amendments contain the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission's administrative rules that are submitted for your approval. With the Dash 1 amendments, Senate Bill 713 has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
All right, Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 713.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 713. Discussion?
Yes. What were the rule changes? There was 24 of them, it seems like.
There's
we never talked about them. So.
There's quite a few. So, in 1 second. The majority of them, I think, are responding to.
Right. So, but there were some
changes.
That were.
Absolutely, there were.
Ones that they did on their own.
So. I think there were five on the email we received that were, so we'll walk through them. Senate Bill 1567 from 2016 created the crime of criminal impersonation, and the commission classified that as a Class A misdemeanor person crime. What that means is a person, it gets added to the criminal history for purposes of that grid we're all big fans of.
Yep.
House Bill 4128 in 2016 modified the crime of extortion to include threatening to report a person's immigration status, and the commission classified that as a crime level 6 on the grid. which is the area right where your bad criminal history can send you to prison, or your good criminal history can keep you in jail.
Okay.
2015 Senate Bill 188 created the crime of unlawful dissemination of an intimate image, so that commonly referred to as revenge porn, I believe, classified as a level 6 again on the grid. 2015 Senate Bill 377 created a amended computer crime to include theft of an intimate image.
Yeah, remember that one.
That's classified as a level 5 on the sentencing guidelines grid. And the last one is that very same crime, the theft of an intimate image, was classified as a person crime rather than a property crime. So again, for purposes of criminal history, that'll move you over on the grid.
Thank you. Appreciate the explanation.
All right. Any other questions? Any objections to the motion? Not seeing any. So moved. And
did I move the floor?
I don't think so.
Okay, I don't think I did either. Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 713 as amended with the -1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 713 as amended by the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 713 to the floor. We'll close the work session on 713.
Go back to 690 and actually move it to the floor.
Okay, that's what I was thought. We're going to go back to 690, which sounds like what we have is the motion that was for the -1s.
Oh,
it sounds like we did not actually move the bill from that stage. So I'm going to reopen a work session on 690. At this point, the state of 690 is we have accepted and received the -1s into the bill, and to move it forward, we need to have a motion on the -1s and on the bill, amended by the -1s.
And it's not going to the Ways and Means.
Right? And it's not going to the Ways and Means.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the -1, I'll move Senate Bill 690 as amended with the -1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 690 as amended by the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered, and we'll close the work session on 690. Senator Denborough will still be the carrier. He tried to get out of
there. I haven't lost interest yet.
Okay. And we've just taken care of 713, and we'll now open up a work session on Senate Bill 767.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 767 on April 11th. The bill modifies the sex offender tiering process. The -2 amendment is the same as the -1 amendment the committee heard, with the exception that it allows the respective classifying boards to classify sex offenders who fail or refuse to participate in the risk assessment as a level 3 offender immediately. The -1 amendments extended that the period of time in which that would happen by 5 years, and the board is comfortable that they can and should be exercising that authority now. So that's the difference between the -2 and the -1. With the -2 amendment, Senate Bill 767 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, Senator Thatcher.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 767.
Senator Thatcher moves the -2 amendments into Senate Bill 676. Excuse me, how about this? 767. I'm looking at that going, why am I saying that? 767. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 767 as amended with the -2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 767 as amended by the -2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Does anyone want to carry one of these CJC bills? If not, the chair. Senator Thatcher will be our carrier on Senate Bill 767. And we'll close the work session on 767, open up a work session on Senate Bill 931.
Chair Prozonsky, members of the committee, you first heard Senate Bill 931 on March 29th. The measure clarifies the ability of courts to replace jurors discharged during deliberations. There are two amendments, both of which originated from a 2014 Oregon State Bar Task Force. The Dash 1 amendment gives judges the discretion to decide when and how to select alternative jurors, when and how additional preemptory challenges may be used, and when and how alternate jurors may be informed of their status. The Dash 2 amendment allows an alternate juror to be used only if consent for the juror's potential use was given by both parties between the time of jury selection and the start of trial. Both amendments have a minimal fiscal impact, and there is no revenue impact on either.
All right, and we need both.
You do, yes.
All right. Senator Thatcher.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 931.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bills 931. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 931.
Senator Thatcher now moves the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 931. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 931 to the
Wait,
floor.
Hasn't been sent to the floor. That's right.
We got two amendments.
All right, Mr. Chair, I'll move I'll move Senate Bill 931 as amended with the Dash 1s and Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 931 as amended by the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 931 to the floor. We'll close the work session on 931. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 1025.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 1025 on April 5th. The bill addresses public safety officials who are subjected to bodily fluids that could carry communicable diseases. The Dash 2 amendments replace the existing statute, which is limited to HIV and hepatitis, with a statute applicable to all communicable diseases. The statute authorizes the court to order testing when a public safety official experiences significant exposure to a communicable disease. With the Dash 2 amendment, Senate Bill 1025 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right.
All right. Ready for motion?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 1025.
Senator Thatcher moves the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 1025. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 1025 as amended with the Dash 2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 1025 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I just feel bad for these people to have to encounter this.
Not good.
It's really bad.
Yeah. Any objections to the motion? Not seeing any. Motion passes. I believe Senator Olson may have been.
Oh, I'll carry.
All right. Yeah, I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure we didn't have someone else that it looks like it was a judiciary bill. Okay. Senator Manning, you'll be the carrier unless there was
I think that I was the one to introduce that bill.
Yeah.
All right. So Senator Manning will be the carrier on 1025. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1025, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 1050.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard Senate Bill 1050 on April 12th. The bill creates a presumptive sentence of life without the possibility of parole for certain sex offenders. The bill has no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact.
All right.
Go to the floor.
No amendment. Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 1050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 1050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I will object. I do not like the principle of the presumptive sentences.
All right. Any other objections? Motion carries. Senator Courtney will be the carrier on Senate Bill 1050. We'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 1050, and we're going to stand at ease for a moment. All right, we're coming out of recess. We just wanted to confirm that all of the paperwork was done, and it appears that all of the bills that we had scheduled for today for either public hearing and or work session by themselves have been taken care of. So I believe our work is concluded for today. I did want to make an announcement. Apparently, there are some individuals that may still be sending testimony in on some of the bills that we had scheduled for today. including Senate Bill 719. Now that we've completed all of our work, the records are closed on all of the bills that we've heard today. And so any material that's sent at this point will not be included as the record, since the record is now closed. With that, the other thing, colleagues, I want to thank everyone for their diligence in getting through what we've gone through in the last couple of days to complete our work, and also to staff. Without our staff, there's no way that we can get our work done. And because of the type of hours that I know they kept above and beyond what I would call the call of duty, the chair has determined that we're going to not have hearings tomorrow, Wednesday, the 19th, and we'll not have hearings on the 20th of Thursday. So our next meeting time will be Monday of next week, and we're going to fall back to our 8:30 start time. Hopefully no one will be upset that we're not starting at 8 o'clock on Monday. But if you really want to get there 30 minutes early, feel free to do so. And we'll see everyone back for work in the committee next Monday. Please remember that we still have our floor obligations tomorrow and Thursday, as far as I know. So even though you may not have to be here first thing in the morning, you should be here by 11 o'clock. With that, is there anything else that we need? Lisa, are we fine? All right, I think we're done. We're adjourned again. Thank you very much. Enjoy the evening. Very much. Enjoy the evening.